everybody, and welcome back to Indie Film Cafe, Season 3.
Season 3.
This is a Season 3 opener, and we've got a fun show for you guys tonight.
Yay.
First of all, I am Jonathan A. Moody, and I'm here with...
Paulie Presenza, known as the Moo Cow. Moo.
And we have a special guest here with us. We're actually in his house. That's awesome.
That's
like,
right.
He invited us over. We could have been serial killers, and he didn't know, but... He trusted us enough, so thank you. Please introduce yourself.
G. Larry Butler, and they climbed over the balcony.
Oh, okay.
I could stop them.
That's right. We're here. Unfortunately, Continuity Monkey got banned, so he's back in Virginia sulking, but he'll get over it.
Did he get banned? You forgot him.
I did not. Okay, I might have just a little bit.
Which you told me on the way, already on the way, and they're like, oh, damn, I forgot Continuity Monkey.
I forgot the monkey. He's our Continuity Monkey.
Gentlemen, please.
Oh, oh my God, I think I forgot TNA Monkey, too.
There you
and this,
go.
And I should have had him. Oh, TNA Monkey.
For this particular movie,
he's in the car. He's in the car, but I just don't want to go grab him. Maybe I could, I don't know. But
you lazy so-and-so.
I am a lazy son of a bitch. All right. So anyway, we are here to talk about a movie. So we're going to be watching in a few minutes a movie. I don't even know if you've seen it, Larry.
Sure.
We have. We both have. And we love it. It's
been a while for me, I will confess. But yeah.
And since we're doing this in Hollywood, California, in L.A., we decided that the first movie back would be a Hollywood-themed indie B movie. And the movie I picked was Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers.
Oh God, my favorite. Yeah.
There you
oh,
go.
You've seen it?
I've never seen it.
Oh, okay.
But if you're gonna get a hooker, you might as well get one in Hollywood with chainsaws. I mean, come on.
Right? You know, that's
they're out there.
Are they? Oh wow.
Yeah, they're all around.
They probably
us.
Get away with a lot, you know, murder. But you know, there you go. We're gonna watch this and talk about more about it after we listen to some
mood music.
And we're back.
Yay.
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 We just finished watching Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers.
Yep. Classic Fred Olen Ray.
Yes. So I guess I'll give a little bit of a background into it. Larry, you said you had never seen this film before.
No, this is my absolutely first time. I was blown away in stitches.
There you go. Literally.
As you would.
Quite a cut up.
There you go. Badooch.
So.
Kind of ran out of gas towards the end, maybe.
Yeah, you could say that.
God, no. We're starting with the bad puns already.
There were a few backfires.
That's all we've got.
Just going to keep going. Oh, they were funnier than some of the jokes that were in it.
Oh,
jeez.
I know.
How many times did he say dick
in the movie? That's we're in Fred Olen Ray territory.
Really?
So, yeah.
Just saying really... Like, I don't know.
Cheap and cheesy, but fun.
I was limp with laughter.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
Here we go. Badooch.
So this film was made in 1988.
I'm surprised it's that.
It might have been
later.
87 yeah. that they actually shot it, but it came out in 88.
Huh.
It was Fred Olen Ray's, I think, I don't know, maybe fifth movie or something.
Because I saw it in the theater. I remember when it came out.
Wow.
But yeah, so he made this movie back in 1988 and five days, I believe.
Yeah.
He shot in 5 days.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Which
God, I'm surprised it took that long.
Yeah, like what's the shortest time that you've been on a set with, like for your films, Larry? Like how
you
long?
You mean for the whole movie?
For
to
the
be
whole
completed?
Movie, yeah.
Probably a little more than that. Maybe 2 weeks.
See, I mean, that's a general thing, but if you're shooting a movie in 5 days, you're going quick and everything.
Right.
Very cool.
One take for everything.
Pretty much.
Probably. And there's probably a bunch of stuff that probably wasn't scripted. I mean, the 80s, especially a lot of independent movie makers like Fred Olen Ray and like Scott Shaw and Donald G. Jackson, they did a lot of what's called guerrilla filmmaking, mm-hmm. where they would just kind of show up with a vague idea and just kind of roll with it and not really script everything out.
Right.
So I don't know that this one necessarily did the entire part of the film with that, but I think they did part of it at least anyway.
Did you say it was called something else other than guerrilla filmmaking? Something else that he...
Well, Donald G. Jackson and Scott Shaw did Zen filmmaking, which is kind of like a further extension of that.
Like even crazier than that. Like,
yeah. A little more idealistic. You'd have to... Scott Shaw's got a whole bunch of stuff on that on his webpage, so you should go there and check that out. But they were all connected. They all knew each other. I was pointing out in the credits to Jonathan here that some of the music was produced by Donald G. Jackson. And, you know, in the 80s, a lot of the independent film folks all knew each other, and they all kind of helped each other out, which was cool. It was a real underground scene here.
Well, I feel like that should be the way it is, like, period. You know, like, all independent filmmakers should be helping each other out so that we can make more movies. And they do that.
There's a place called Film Independent. It's an organization here in town.
Great.
And they do just what you just mentioned.
Oh, wow.
Film Independent.
Something you should look into, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will definitely take a look at that. So let me talk about a little bit about the story, what the story's about, you know. It says, join Detective Jack Chandler as he tracks a runaway teen, played by horror queen Linnea Quigley,
Yay.
Into the dark recesses of Los Angeles. Most stringent religious cult. Beware the chainsaw-worshipping madman, played by Texas Chainsaw Massacre's original Leatherface, Gunnar Hansen. And above all else, watch out for the saw-wielding vixen performing the virgin dance of the double chainsaws. Wow. So they really, like, promoted that, period.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the story, but we'll go more into the story and kind of give people more of an in-depth, like, look and... everything. It starts out with Jack Chandler talking like it's a film noir.
Right, film noir, definitely like a Robert Chandler kind of a thing. And
Jack Chandler.
Jack
Chandler.
So
yeah. Perfect. And so he's basically asked to find this girl, a runaway.
And he dresses up the part, and he's drinking whiskey, and he's you know, the whole thing. He's the whole noir stereotype going on.
And it's a parody, obviously. Like, yeah. It's a spoof of these things. And so he's basically looking for this chick, Samantha, and he can't find her, but he finds a clue with this girl that was arrested.
He actually steals it. He steals it right in front of the cops. You're like too dumb to even notice it.
Well, right before that, but he actually met the chick, who this chainsaw chick. Meanwhile, we're also seeing that the town is being kind of taken over by hookers who kidnap people. Don't kidnap them, but they bring them to, like, their room, and then they go and murder them.
Yes. Not just any hooker. They're cutting-edge hookers.
Exactly.
Cutting-edge hookers.
Ripping comment.
Yes. My big question about that, though, what was the point? Like, are these all sacrifices for the, or is it just like they just want to?
Well, every time that happened, you notice Gunnar Hansen's priest character would be there in the background watching them and nodding his head like he's happy.
Yeah. I always thought he was like the pimp originally.
But, you know, the question is that a sacrifice or are they just having fun? I think they're just having fun.
I want to say they're just having fun, but like he's watching and making sure that they're doing it. So maybe it is a sacrifice.
They might be collecting souls, which some cults do.
Could be.
They kill people.
But you notice, well, at least one of them kills the camera guy with a bat and then dismembers him.
Right.
So as long, I guess, as the chainsaw is used somehow, it doesn't necessarily have to be slain by the chainsaw, but it has to be used on the person. So I don't know. They don't really go into any depth. And as a matter of fact, because there's no religious cult, including an Egyptian one, that has anything to do with chainsaws, and they're just making up this baloney as they go, it doesn't really surprise me that there's no details on this. But it's okay. Sure. It's you're not there. You know, we're not here to watch a religious movie about, you know, that kind of thing. We're here to see tits and chainsaws.
Exactly.
That's why this movie was made.
Exactly.
blood and boobs. Good
there
combination.
You go.
Blood, boobs, and...
Beasts was supposed to be the thing. The three B's of John Landis was talking about to making a successful schlock film.
What's yes. the third one?
It's blood, boobs, and beasts.
Oh, beasts.
Right.
Beasts. Okay, great. And I guess you could say, like, these chainsaw hookers are kind of beasts in a way. Some of them look pretty rugged and, you know, and bad looking. Because...
Well, and then, of course, at the end... You don't get to see the bodies, you know. Spoiler alert there. They just kind of vanish.
Remember, we do spoilers here, so all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this whole
episode. Because you got to see the movie.
Yeah. You have to watch the movie, then watch, you know, then listen to this podcast.
Where can this be found?
Well, actually, I bought the Blu-ray on Amazon.
There you go.
And it's actually a really good Blu-ray. It's got commentary by Fred Olen Ray. With moderated by David Dakota, who was a big time 80s filmmaker as well, did Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bolarama. Wow. Yes, that is a hard, you know, which I also own, but it's a hard title to say. But I own this movie. It's a really great movie, actually. Just so much fun and silliness. They've got like a documentary about it that just talks about remembering the movie and things like that. So, I mean, tons of different cool little, you know, extra features on it. So,
as far as the story goes, basically he's trying to find this runaway girl. Turns out she's actually pretending to join the cult, you know, after he tracks her down, because the cult killed one of her friends, and so he ends up rescuing her anyway, and, you know, because they have a fight over her being involved, and... they end up finding out that there's going to be this big sacrifice in a warehouse downtown. So they go there, and of course they get themselves captured because Chandler's an idiot. And when they stick some drugs in her, the blood of their god, they think she's going to convert back or something, which is dumb. I don't know why you would give it another chance, but it doesn't matter because Leanna Quigley ends up killing the two of the three main bad people and saves Chandler and saves the day.
I want to just point out that they say in it that they're going to, like, you said that he was an idiot and that's why they got caught. Literally, he was the dumbest, you know, person in the world because, they just walk out into one area and this guy just walks up and gets them, right. You know? Like, it's not like they were doing any kind of stealth moving or hiding or trying to, you know? Like, they literally walk out. Where anybody can find them, and you know,
right, and you know, he's really pretending to be this rough, tough private detective. He's like, oh, I almost got shot, and I almost got stabbed,
right,
you know,
yeah.
So the toughest thing he does is like not shave. That's about it.
That's the toughest job he has, you know, right?
Right, right.
So anyway, did you have anything to add to the story? Was there anything in the story that you wanted to say, Larry?
Just. To follow on Paul's comment about the, you know, he thinks he's a tough dick, but he's kind of a would-be, you know, a wannabe dick. But,
right, he's not very good.
No, he's not. No.
But, I don't know, everybody around him's not very good, period.
I know, well, that's just it. You're not watching these movies for character development. You're,
right.
Right.
You know, or even a plot that makes sense. It's just, you know, the ending.
Like, there's the cop character, and I guess we'll get into the characters in a little bit, but the cop character's just basically, like, he says almost yes to everything, you know? Right. Like, he's like, hey, I'll walk down with you, okay.
And we all noticed that it was half serious, half silly.
Yeah.
It couldn't make up its mind if it was a serious or a silly movie.
And right. So, now, you could have done, if you had had more money or more time... You could have made this into a more serious film. Now, it may not have necessarily worked as a serious film, but you could have done it. Or you could have just gone sort of over the top parody.
Yes, go all the way over.
Go all the way over and have fun with it. But it's kind of in the middle. And that's one of the problems I personally had with the movie, with the tone of it. It actually gets a little dull.
It does.
From time to time. It's just kind of there.
Which
doesn't really commit.
You said at the end, toward the end, you were like, "This is a little bit more boring than you remember it, right?"
Right.
And everything, and
it's probably I don't actually have a copy of it. I mean, I will at some point.
I have it mainly to do this show because I wanted to do something from Hollywood that was definitely that says Hollywood, you know, now that I'm living out here.
Sure.
I figured this would be the perfect opening. But honestly, even the first time I watched it, I was a little like, you know, this isn't as interesting as right. I thought it would be.
Right.
You know, and for a movie that's only an hour and 15 minutes, you'd think, like, things would move.
Yeah. So, I thought I could stay awake longer, but I had narcolepsy.
And well, you were the first one who pointed out about the tone, because I'm sure you've been in movies that have both been fairly serious and also fairly just kind of over the top.
Yeah.
Have you been in a movie that sort of tried to do both and it just didn't?
Unfortunately, yes. I won't mention them. But yeah, I've been in just about every type of movie
there is. Let me ask you this. While you're in the middle of making it, can you feel that? Can you feel that sort of like someone's trying to walk a tightrope and it's not really working?
Yes, you can. But you don't want to say anything because you want to, you know, work again.
Right,
So you have to be kind of politically correct and not say much.
Well, also, you have to think as an actor that not just you want to work again, but also you want to do the best performance you can do.
I always do that. I hate it when actors just walk through the movie, you know, pick up their paycheck. And,
right.
I know actors who the other person that they're playing off of won't give them what they need.
Yes.
So they'll just do as good of a job as they can. And if the person doesn't give them what they need, they can't do anything about it. Because you can't tell somebody while you're working, because it's very tough while you're working to do that.
Right.
I've had actors bail where, you know, you need eye line. So I would do it for them, and then they'd leave and go home, and I'd have nothing but a blank wall to say my lines to.
Awful.
So it's like, you got to give me something. But, you know, I force myself to be as real as possible, no matter if I'm right up against the wall saying my lines or not.
And the other thing, too, is, you know, as an actor, you can only do so much. You can only control your role. And even then, you kind of got to give the performance that they want you to, because if they want to walk the middle of the road, you have to go that way. You can't just all of a sudden be over the top, because they're going to tell you, no, don't do it like that.
Right.
You rein it in. Or you can't be really serious about it. They're going to tell you to loosen it up.
Yeah.
So you can only do what they're going to want you to do anyway.
Exactly. Well, I love to give them whatever they want. So they always say, you know, you take good direction, and that's always high praise for me. So.
Right. You rarely ever see a situation like when we did Vampire's Kiss, where we had, I forget the director's name, but it's probably his first movie that he ever directed. And here comes Nicolas Cage, who, you know, even at that age, he was an up-and-coming star who wanted to become an even bigger star. And he pretty much, his performance takes over the whole film.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm guessing the director just wasn't in a position to tell Nicolas Cage not to act in a certain way.
Oh,
just
come on.
Let him go.
Let him go. Dude, if Nicolas Cage was in my thing, I would just let him do whatever.
Seriously.
It's just like Gary Busey. You just let him go.
Just let him go.
Wind them up
and let them go. Yeah. And that's what happens.
They chew the furniture sometimes, but that's, you know, that's intriguing. It's interesting watching them do it. Who's that other guy? It was in Beetlejuice. He chewed all the scenery.
Michael Keane.
Yeah, my Michael God, Keane. He just went nuts.
Well, in this particular film, I think Michelle Bauer kind of went a little over the top. Just the way she's sort of, you know, always sticking her fingers in people's drinks and trying to be all sultry and just like way over the top with it. And it's kind of like, if I were the character and she was doing this, I'd be like, why are you so skanky?
No, you wouldn't. You'd be like, ooh, hey.
Well, when I was 20-something years old,
you would still say that now, I'm sure. Yeah, if Michelle Bauer walked over and put her finger in your drink, you'd be like, hey.
Germs.
You wouldn't say that because you wouldn't care.
You'd be sucking her finger.
Yeah, you suck her finger, because I don't lie.
Old Paul, not so much these days. So things happen that you crack for.
Okay, all right, whatever. I don't buy it, but, you know. We'll move on from that.
Michelle Bauer, please stick your finger in my drink.
Yes, exactly. That sounds like a sexual thing anyway.
Yeah, there you go.
Stick your finger in my drink.
Well, she did it like three times. It's just funny. Oh, man.
She did it, yeah. And she was like, I don't know, she was so boisterous and she was so in your face with her boobs and everything. It was nice. It was kind of like, it was kind of cool because most of the other actors didn't do anything.
Right.
Like
that. She was good, and I thought Leanna Quigley was good. The guy who did Chandler was okay. You know, he kind of walked in the middle. All the other ones just didn't really kind of register. Even Gunnar Hansen just kind of meh.
Yeah. Yeah. The girl who was the chainsaw girl in the beginning that later he, you know, gets the clue from or whatever.
Right.
She was freaking off the charts, bonkers. I loved it. She was laughing crazy. Mm-hmm. I think you were even saying something, Larry, when you were watching it about her, because she was just, she was so over the top, you know, and everything. Do you know?
I babbling and spewing all kinds of things out of my mouth?
I don't know.
I'm going to say yes.
Yes, let's just say
was
that.
Was I catatonic?
I don't. I think you're spewing in everything all over.
I tell you, the thing that got me about her is, like, I mean, all I could focus on was that outrageous wig she was wearing.
Yeah.
It was just crazy.
Oh, the first one with the white hair and
right,
the wig.
Right,
yeah,
right.
She was demonic. We thought she was a man.
Wig. That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
She was a man at first, and she was just like laughing all weird, cackling the whole time. And, you know.
And it's like, you know, they're interviewing her, and the cops, being morons in this world, they give her the chainsaw. Like, oh, did you do something with this? And she's like, why, yes, I did. And she turns it on and kills two of them.
Yeah, let me show you.
Dumbasses.
God, she was horrible.
Yeah.
But, and that was horrible scene because, like, I don't, like, nobody would do that. And even the cop before says, she was supposed to spill her guts, but then they left the gas in the chainsaw, so she spilled their guts.
Right.
And I was like, oh, come on. Like, a lot of these are just really bad, not even bad puns, they're just bad jokes and cheesiness, you know. But I don't know, it was kind of fun.
They wrote this in like 5 minutes.
Probably.
There you go.
At least it was drastically rewritten, is what the credits said. Drastically rewritten.
I'm surprised that the cops weren't just there all with donuts and coffee, you know, at all times. You know, stuffing donuts in themselves.
Well, yeah, but was that an 80s thing? Because I thought that was more like a 90s thing.
It was an 80s thing, too.
80s, okay.
Like cops and donuts?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Mm. All right.
Bad cop, no donut.
isn't that a movie? There's a movie called that.
Possibly.
All right, so we're going to go into, I guess we talked a little bit about the characters and stuff, but let's go into the actual characters and stuff. So there's Jack Chandler, and he was...
It's Jay Richardson, right?
Played by Jay Richardson, who's, I think his real name is John R. Richardson or something.
I think he's been in a bunch of stuff.
John Henry Richardson, I'm sorry. And he's been in a ton of stuff.
Is he still acting?
He's still acting.
Still acting.
His last project was last year, Confessions of a Teenage Satanist.
Okay.
So he's still doing B-movies.
I wonder how many of them have chainsaws in them.
I don't know. And then there's obviously Linnea Quigley.
Yay.
She played Samantha. And then there's Gunnar Hansen.
Right.
Which you can't have a chainsaw movie without Leatherface.
Yeah.
Like, that just would make no sense.
Yeah.
Sadly,
he's passed on, so he's...
Yeah, you said you met him.
I met him a few years ago at a convention and had a picture taken with him.
Cool.
Awesome.
He's lost a lot of weight since this movie.
Wow.
Yeah. But he has white hair, white beard.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's... aged considerably in 30 years.
We all do.
We do.
Michelle Bauer. Working in stuff, right?
Yep. And she's been in a few things more recently. I think she took a break from acting for a little bit. And I don't know what she was concentrating on herself on. But she did a lot of stuff with David Akota.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of came back with, if I'm correct, it was the thing that brought her back. Really was, let's see, there was a cougar cult.
Oh, there you go.
with Linnea and Brink, I believe.
Yeah,
Brink
and Stevens. Those are the three, that was the troika of Scream Queens in the 80s.
Right.
Those three were the big ones, although there were others as well.
Well, there was a ton of ton of amazing Scream Queens in the 80s, but really, like, everybody knows Linnea from, like, her horror workouts and things like that. But Michelle Bauer was always there with them and
absolutely.
Everything.
Told you, I had a thing for her back in the 80s.
Definitely. Yeah. And then let's see, after she played Mercedes, which they make jokes the whole time
so,
about.
So, yeah, the car jokes.
There's another Scream Queen, Lynn Lowry.
Oh, Lynn Lowry.
Oh, Lynn Lowry, yeah.
So I've picture with her. I was at a convention with her. And we wanted to work together, and the project never gelled, but, you know, maybe someday. She's still acting.
You never know.
Yeah, you never know. Don't ever give up.
Right. Sometimes they vanish for a while and come back. Felicia Rose, you know, she was a Scream Queen and, you know, Sleepaway Camp. And all of a sudden, she was gone for like 20 years, came back and is now in a ton of movies.
Oh, here's another one. Remember, let's see, Betsy Baker from Evil Dead?
Evil Dead.
Yeah, so I worked in a movie with her called Lake Erie.
Oh, I know of Lake Erie, yeah.
Never saw that one.
So, once in a while we'll have lunch together, but we're trying to get in a movie together, and we'll see if it happens.
That's great.
Fantastic. Then there was, other girls, a lot of them I don't remember. There was Lori, who was the girlfriend, who was basically...
Sally.
What?
She played Sally.
No. Her name was Lori.
Oh, her name was Lori.
The character's name was Lori. Played by Dawn Wildsmith. But she... Sally wasn't the... No, okay. Sally was the girlfriend.
Sally was the girlfriend.
Which one was Lori?
I'm not sure either.
She was one of the...
She was the one who got her pictures taken?
Yeah.
Okay. She had kind of the nose thing going. Yeah.
It was this girl. And it would freaking load.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the one who got her picture taken.
Okay.
And she killed the guy with the baseball bat.
Oh, yeah. The guy that just would not stop talking. Yeah.
Herman.
Hermie, as she called him and everything. That's really funny. I loved it. And then there was Lisa, played by Esther Elise, who was, I believe she was one of the other hookers also. Mm-hmm. And then there was Sally, it was played by Susie Wilson, who was the girlfriend who got really upset when, later, like, I guess she kept just getting mad at him all the time. After, I guess, he hooks up with her, and then he'll leave and she'll get mad that he's leaving. And then she finds out he's with Samantha.
Right.
Samantha.
Yep. Linnea Quigley. So. And then there is, I think everybody else is pretty much.
Well, there's the bartender.
The bartender played by Dookie Flyswatter.
Oh, God. Who, I don't know what his real name is.
His real name is Michael Sony.
His real name.
That should be.
God, I hope not. Smack his mother around.
Well, I mean, that you'd swat a fly swatter.
I know. Oh, but he was in a bunch of stuff, and I was pointing out, it's like, yeah, he was like a lesser Eddie Deason in the 80s, but he was in a bunch of 80s garbage.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny. And he's got that whole Peter Lorre look going on. Did you notice that?
Like, yeah, a little bit. And then there was, there was a guy who played Hermie.
Right.
And he was, I think he's been in a bunch of stuff before.
He was
before.
In the Slime Ballerama one,
he's
too.
He's in Hermaphrodite?
Oh. I don't think he was in Slime Ballerama, was he? No, he wasn't. No, but he was in a couple other really bad movies back then, like Evil Spawn and a few other things.
Wow.
So, fun projects.
Yeah, and these are all folks who were in the Hollywood area who were just in all kinds of different... independent B movies of the day, of the era. So,
and they just churned them out.
Yeah, they
right?
just churned them out, and they just used the same group of people. And it's funny because I know we're supposed to be talking characters now, but we might as well bring this up. There are, at least the west part of Hollywood, I guess, has for a long time been like the rough, ugly part of town where you would expect there to be hookers and crime and violence and all that. Yeah. And it goes all the way back to the 50s with a lot of the sort of juvenile delinquent movies up through, like, Ed Wood would do probably some stuff there. I know Ray Dennis Steckler shot some of his movies there, the Hollywood Strangler meets the Skid Row Slasher. And that whole West Hollywood thing was always kind of an area that's considered a no-go zone. But it was also a place where, you know, stuff was cheap, clubs were cheap, a lot of bands would play there because it was cheap, or people like Ed Wood would have their office there because it was cheap, mm-hmm. you know? So that's where all your massage parlors were and all of that. And that, from what I understand, is largely gone now that they've kind of cleaned all that up. Kind of like the Times Square area in New York City.
Yeah.
Where it used to be rough.
Moved to the Valley.
Oh, I see.
And that became the porn mecca.
Okay.
I don't know right now what's happening, but they tried to clean it up from the Valley. They just keep one step ahead of the law, and they, you know, they transition to different places.
Yeah, I imagine that with the video era and with getting stuff online, that you no longer had to worry about holding real estate for like peep shows and right. stuff like that, or even, you know, topless bars and all that, because it wasn't really paying anymore, because you can just go online and exactly. get your thrills that way.
Yeah.
So once all that element left, mm-hmm. I'm guessing that's, you know, why things are opening up. We went earlier to see the studio where Ed Wood shot Plan 9 and worked mm-hmm. on some of his other movies. Mm-hmm. And that was in an area that would have been in a no-go zone. Mm-hmm. But we went there and it didn't seem too bad now, you know.
Yeah, nowadays it doesn't seem that bad because I guess things could just get cleaned up.
They're getting gentrified. Yeah.
They are gentrifying everything. And
the the studio that, you know, I guess, I don't know if it's like a history thing or something, like they're putting it into a museum. But we went, because we went on New Year's Day, which is probably the worst day to go anywhere, period, you know, because everything's closed. Mm-hmm. But we went there and they actually had it, you know, locked. But like it was like, security lock, you know, they had like cameras all over and everything. Right. They don't want anybody going in there unless right. invited in
right.
or have an appointment or whatever.
Yeah.
But we over there, it was really cool. Like we, you know, mm-hmm. we asked the guy next door at the tailor shop about it, and mm-hmm. he was just telling us like if it would be open, you know, right now if it weren't freaking New Year's.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm. We may go back, I don't know, who knows, before the end of the
So month. This particular film is kind of a relic of that era from the 40s through the early 90s, I'd say, when that part of West Hollywood was just sort of that whole sleazy thing. Just like, you know, it was pretty much the same era for Times Square, New York, and all that's changed now. So there are people now who are growing up, like the millennial groups, who they don't understand that. So when they mm-hmm. see a movie like this, they're not quite going to get it, you know, whereas, you know, certainly when I was growing up and when you were growing up, mm-hmm. those places had those reputations and for a very good reason.
True.
Now it's like a whole new world.
Well, it's all gay, almost exclusively West Hollywood.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, so times really have changed, you know.
There you
like,
go.
It's just period. But this is, you know, this was like the seedy part of town and people were able to make movies for cheaper.
Yeah, and that's why a lot of those movies were made there, because you either didn't need a permit or nobody cared, so you just went there and it was interesting. You had a lot of weird and interesting characters running around, you know, some ladies of the evening, gangs, all kinds of stuff there, but it had flavor. It was interesting. It's not like today where everything is a Starbucks and you know, whatever else corporate thing that's going on.
It's true.
You know?
Very yeah.
true. Yeah.
80s were a different time.
Yeah.
And you could make a movie like this. This movie is not something you could make today
at all.
Very chauvinistic, very
misogynistic.
Un-Me Too kind of like movie where, you know, it's not, you know, but it's still, to me, it's still sort of it's a pinnacle movie of its time. It's something that at the time mm-hmm. they made something that they felt they were gonna, you know, get to. So
I doubt that we could have made Double D today. That's what Bill Winkler keeps saying. Probably couldn't have done it.
So you're gonna make a remake of that or something?
No,
or
not a remake.
Or a sequel?
But we were thinking of a sequel, but he's decided to put that on hold.
See, I think it could. I only think it really kind of maybe came close to crossing the line with the whole Crocodile Fruit with
yes
with Kim
because it was a bikini movie. He didn't have any bare breasts.
Right. So everything with that was fine. It wasn't until that part, and we were like,
"Yeah,
that okay."
We did. Yes. Well,
but that was great. I mean, nobody else did
it
that.
Cured her cancer.
There you go. Yeah, but yeah, times have definitely changed, and you know, some of that is for the good, but some of it is kind of bad too, because you know, you don't want social norms to dictate how you make your movies. I mean, you got to, artists have to be free to make what they want to make.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, but on the other time, on the other hand, people, you know, the main character in this film, Chandler, you know, you want him here. They want him to be sort of the sympathetic guy that we all identify with. And maybe in the '80s it would have been, but you know, today where every compliment he's giving the women is all about their boobs. That's all he talks about.
Right.
Treats them kind of like, you know, throwaways.
Like objects.
Yeah.
He kept saying nice tits or.
Right. Yeah. That was his thing.
Great
like,
tits.
He even said it one time and Linnea, stopped him or whatever. Or the other girl, I think it was Michelle Bauer's character, stopped him from actually saying tits, you know, like they're like one time and then like
so,
or something.
You know, for me, I was in high school in the '80s, so for me I would have been laughing, sure, this is great. But you know, 30 years later I'm kinda like, yeah, okay.
You're getting kinda tired of it. Well, we live in the day of like internet porn, you know, so like tits don't even matter anymore.
Right.
And I think that's almost the problem with today's society. We're just so like, I mean,
we're jaded.
I don't know, jaded or desensitized from it. Like we don't care about breasts. You go on Twitter and there's a million porn stars on there showing everything. And that's great, but it's like we got free of it all the time. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can go to, I don't even think Playboy even shows it anymore because they're just like it doesn't matter anymore.
Oh yeah. In the 80s in high school, I mean, you had to either somehow get a hold of a porn movie or, you know, you got a magazine, you know, a Penthouse or that's it. You know, I mean, you couldn't just jump on the internet and boom, instant access to whatever you wanted.
Exactly.
You know? Very different situation.
So this type of movie would have gone well for younger people.
Oh, yeah.
Especially.
Oh, yeah. Back then, And today, maybe, I guess, if people were, you know, younger people weren't on the internet constantly. But like I said, I think it's just too much, maybe. Like, even when I first watched it, because I just watched it last year for the first time, and I was, like, thinking to myself, this is kind of like, I don't care about them taking their shirt off anymore. Like, it doesn't excite me as much.
And that was the thing, and especially in the 80s, independent B films, that, you know, that's kind of what they had to do, is to sort of out-boob the other film so that you could get the kids coming to the movies to come watch your film. Right. Well, this one's got more boobs than this one. Oh, we'll bring that one.
That's
how we build Double D, the Booborama or something, I remember.
That's right.
Well, boobalistic or
boobalistic.
Yeah, the booby buggy. I love the booby
buggy.
It was so great.
But that's the thing. And now today, people like even Jim Minorski, who's a director of that kind of that 80s and whatnot. He directed those kind of movies. He even says today, you still need boobs. And I don't think so. Honestly, we're living in a day where, I mean, I know you hate this, because you hate the way it's going, but it's going more toward PG-13 for a lot of stuff, because these films that have all this stuff just aren't interesting anymore, because it's just like we see so much of it.
Like Joe Bob Briggs called them ticket sellers.
That's the guy that did the commentary, Joe Bob.
Bob.
Oh, he does fantastic commentary all over the place.
I think boobs are always going to sell. I don't know why this turned into a boob talk, you know, but it did. But I think it's kind of the way. If it's just mindless and over the top and just tons of it, it's an avalanche of boobs and it's not a big deal. We don't care about it anymore. On the other hand, if it's done well and if it's actually if it's something that can be useful in the plot and it's done artistically, I still think there's a place for it. It's just people have kind of lost the subtlety or the ability to do it with subtlety.
I think that's the point of the janitor that I was in, because the director wanted to go way over the top and satirize the boobs and the blood, so it was just a wealth of it. I mean, way too much.
Right.
And it works, because it's supposed to be a spoof.
Right.
Right.
And in a way, I will say about this particular film, I mean, this is a spoof too, so you can sort of do this and get away with it, at least on some level, because that, you know, this is not a porn movie. You know, this is not like a mainstream movie trying to get you in there for that either. Clearly, this is a parody, and, you know, it's supposed to add to the humor and make it fun. Now, it's a different version of what fun we consider now, but that's just how it was in the 80s. But it's definitely a relic of its time.
It's a spoof, but it also takes itself way too seriously.
It does. It does.
And I think that's what you mentioned earlier about the tone, is it's two parts.
It vacillates back and forth, and we're not sure what its message is and what tone it's trying to say.
Oh, I know what its message is.
Well, I mean, I'm not boobs the message, are great. But the tone itself, it took itself too seriously for a comedy and too silly to be a serious movie.
Right, right, right.
We were confused.
It's like, let's get the boobs out there, but what can we pair it with? Chainsaws.
Exactly. Perfect. And I think a lot of films suffer from that thing, and it all comes down to the script.
Right.
When they're writing the script, you have to set the tone. Is this going to be a serious movie, or is this going to be a spoof? If it's going to be a spoof, you do like the Naked Gun kind of thing, the airplane kind of thing. You go that route and try to just make it, you know, I mean, you're not making fun of other movies or whatever, but you're kind of poking fun at the genre and everything, and you just decide to go all out. When you make it too serious in that, you just kind of kill the vibe of the movie. Right.
And now that we've mentioned and talked about the boobs, we should probably also talk about the chainsaws. So clearly the chainsaws are sort of like central to the movie. I mean, for whatever reason, they are the worship device of Anubis. I don't understand why. That makes no sense whatsoever. But it's there to be cool and edgy and fun in the 80s kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
They're never turned on. I mean, obviously, they have somebody sort of in post-production added sound of chainsaws, but they're never turned on. And even when Linnea is doing her little dance, and it's not much of a dance, she with the chainsaws, you can clearly see they're not on.
Well, there's smoke. I mean, it's that fake smoke, but
it's
not on. That was the other thing I want to mention, the chainsaw dance, or a dance of the double chainsaws.
Right.
It was hyped up so much on the back of that cover, all these things. And people have talked about that and everything. I honestly thought it was weak.
It is weak. Know? It's very weak.
It's not what I expected as a film lover, you know, horror film lover.
Because, especially. I mean, poor Linnea Quigley, she's small. Those things are heavy. They're big. Even if they're not turned on, they're still probably sharp. I would not want to drop one of those damn things on my foot. So she did what she could.
Well, she did what she could. I mean, obviously, they needed a bigger woman to handle that stuff. But no, it was not that good.
She should have done the chicken dance. Like
there you go. You know I love the chicken dance.
You really, oh man.
Oh, I love to no end. And then we come back with the line about we can have chicken dinners.
I know.
Oh, great.
Oh my goodness.
Did you add lib dem or is that in the script?
No, that was scripted.
Oh, that was great.
Man.
But you see, that's just it. Even though this movie had some jokes, it wasn't that kind of a joke. I mean, those jokes were much funnier. You know what I mean? It was just it was done better. The tone was right. You know, I've shown this movie to a lot of people. They all liked it. Even just Jen, our female co-host, she thought it was cute. It was good. I don't know that she would have liked this film.
Yeah.
Because of the tone.
And it's like, it's just got way too much. It's great, got gratuitous nudity for no, like, there were times where the girl would just take off her top for no, like, she wasn't planning to do anything, but they just wanted to show the boobs.
Right.
It's just, good God.
I mean, typically, in the day, it would just do a shower scene. You would just throw a shower scene in there for no reason other than the fact that you get to see a girl take off her top. And then usually she gets in there and does what I like to say, you know, how men think women shower, in which they just stand there and fondle themselves for like 50 minutes, which is, of course, not what happens. It really isn't.
Oh,
you know, it's just silly. But they didn't do that in this particular film, but it's of that ilk.
Yeah. It is of that ilk, which is, you know, whatever. It's a thing of its time. And as I said earlier, its time was, you know, boobs were the thing that sold movies.
Sure.
You know, like, there's that line in Ed Wood, in the movie Ed Wood, where the guy says, what could you put? Or Ed Wood says, what can you put in it that'll make it sell? And the guy goes, tits.
Yep.
You know, right? And I go, no better than that. But you know, like, a star or whatever, right? Yeah. And this movie had, these had B-movie stars. It had Linnea Quigley. So it had tits and a star. Good for it, you know? And it had a lot of different things that kind of helped it become a cult classic. It's that kind of movie.
Sure.
You know, which is beautiful and fine, but it's not.
In high school, everyone lined up to see it because, you know, it was edgy and there was boobs and there's the hint of violence and, you know, it was just that era.
Uh-huh. You know? But it wasn't the greatest, you know, of all the movies. But we'll get into that when we do, at the end, we do a review, which we'll be getting to soon.
But it's not the worst either. I mean, clearly this is no Hobgoblins. This is no Hard Rock Zombies. You know, for an 80s film, there's a lot of polish. And I have to say this about Fred Olen Ray. Most of his movies, even though he has a fairly small budget, he's usually able to have a lot of polish. You know, the way this was produced and the way that it was done, there was a lot more polish than a lot of cheap independent films of its time. Which is kind of one of the reasons why I don't have a lot of them, you know, lined up as stinkers, just because while there's some stink, they're not that bad.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, there's a lot of crappy pretend, and yeah, some of the acting is a little bit, but this is much better than a lot of other films of its period.
It's perfumed stink.
There you go.
I like that. We're going to have to use that. We're going to have to keep using the perfume stink.
You may quote me.
Okay, we'll quote you on that. That's really good. So to go into that, the acting of this film, even though all over the place, I feel.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
You know, like there are some people that are way over the top, and there are some people that play it straight and kind of boring, you know, delivery-wise and everything. And we mentioned Gunner, not, you know, obviously Gunner was more of a stunt guy, you know, type person, you know. Right. No, it wasn't a stunt guy, but he was the guy in the mask, you know, that didn't talk.
Yeah,
you know?
He was there because of his name. That's really it.
And he didn't do the greatest job acting, but it wasn't bad.
Was he playing somebody who was wooden, you know, or was he really wooden as an actor?
I'm not sure, because I've seen him in other things, and he's been better. Yeah.
I think he's more of a physical actor. They didn't really give him that in this role, you know. He wasn't the chance to do anything physical. Yeah. He basically just kind of stood around and was creepy.
Yeah.
You know? He was like the creepy Tom Bosley guy in Charlie's Angels.
Okay.
You know, instead of his angels have hookers with chainsaws.
Well, the one thing I didn't like about the acting and whatnot, and this always irks me as a filmmaker, you know, like I plan never to do this, but I think I've probably done it in short films by accident. There's a scene where the guy is in the bed. He's not tied up. There's plenty of ways he could leave. And he just starts screaming when she turns on the chainsaw. This is the first guy. The first guy.
Right.
And he starts screaming, and then, like, dude, just get off the bed and run.
Yeah, do something.
Yeah, right. Knock her out. You're bigger than her. Like, what is going on here?
He wasn't convincing that he was horrified.
Right. It wasn't convincing that he was horrified. And he had millions of ways to run out. That worries me. Right. Like, what they should have done is what they did with the other guy, which is they should have drugged him, tied him up, and then he'd have no reason to, like, escape.
Right. I mean, as soon as she puts plastic on the wall...
Right. I would have been out the door.
Common sense should kick in and say, hey, this generally doesn't happen when you pick up a prostitute. This happens when a serial killer picks you up.
Yes.
I don't know. How many prostitutes have you picked up? Come on, Paul.
True confessions here.
Anyway, common sense should prevail, and you should, even in this day and age.
The next time they do that.
Yes, well, especially in this day and age, because there are way more crazier people today.
Well, that plus every show on TV has people putting down plastic. What was the movie?
Dexter.
Yeah.
Oh, so. That's right.
Yeah. that was the big thing.
And there ain't no other reason for it. So.
Oh, American Psycho.
There you go.
Just a lot of these things. They do that stuff. So, I mean, once you see plastic, you know there's a serial killer
pretty much
around.
You know you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know you shouldn't just lie there.
Well, I mean, the dude shouldn't have lied there, period. Anyway, that bothers me. Like, because I'm like, why are you screaming? Hey, you're a tough dude. Like, he was like a construction worker or something. She was joking on him the whole time about that.
Right.
Like, yeah. Dude, get the up and just push her out of the way. Or you know.
People who don't bother to defend themselves kind of deserve their fate. You know.
Or even, she asked him to wear that hat, you know, that they'll cover her hair and stuff like
that. That was ludicrous, that whole scene.
Ugh, that scene was like the worst scene in the whole movie. Because it just didn't make any sense and whatnot. Yeah. But there was other little scenes. We talked about the touching of the, where he found the clue and everything, and people were touching it and stuff.
I know, and then like the forensics part, and A, what the hell's Chandler even back there for? There's like nobody's bothering to keep the chain of evidence. You know, nobody, you know, there shouldn't be anybody back there looking at anything or touching anything or have anything to do with anything related to any case.
No gloves, maybe.
I know, and no gloves, nothing.
Ugh, it was just.
And every time he wanted to do something, the cop would be like, oh, whatever, sure. Don't care.
Yeah. It kind of, well, it represented the way it was in real life. I think in the 80s was kind of a sloppy forensic time.
Yeah. Was
they
it?
They weren't as thorough as they are now. Since the O.J. Simpson trial, they've got cleaned up their act quite a bit.
Interesting.
And I did not know that.
Very analytical about everything.
Well, there you go, Fred Olin Ray. We're wrong. Maybe that's how it really was. But that was obviously also a spoof of it, you know. And so and it's understandable. But all in all, I guess we'll go into the rating right now because we're pretty much at that time.
Okay.
So we're going to... So explain to Larry, who I don't think has actually, you know, like, have you heard the show, like the actual podcast, or have you just watched it?
I have, one or two, but...
Okay.
Well, for your sake and for the sake of those folks living out there, we have something called the Stinkometer, which we rate our movie from 1 to 10 based on what we think is how stinky it is, where a 1 is a low score, so it's not very much stink at all. All the way up to a 10, which is like a tidal wave of stink. And then 5 is kind of in between. And if you want, you want to get subtle about it, you could give it a half step, like a 3.5 or a 4.5. And then what we end up doing is we get 3 scores. We total them up. We get the average. And then at the end of the year, we figure out which movie is the stinkiest of that particular year. Now, I have to say, the reigning champion for Findy Film Cafe, 2 years running, is Neil Breen. His 2 movies that we saw are the only movies that have ever gotten 30s, which is 10s from everybody.
That's amazing.
Because they are amazingly special movies, and you need to see those. You need to see any Neil Breen movie you can.
Mm-hmm.
They're a special breed. But this is season 3, so... We don't know who's going to end up on top. It could be that Neil Breen's a 3-time champion. Maybe not. Maybe Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers will knock him off his perch. We'll have to see.
We'll have to see. So let's, I guess, Paul, do you want to go first?
Sure.
What would be your score for it?
Now, again, this is a pretty bad film. There's a lot of stink there. But again, this movie's also got a lot more polish than especially movies of its type back in the 80s. And while some of the acting was kind of half-hearted or, you know, not very good, there was actually some good stuff there too. Direction-wise, I thought it was pretty good. The pacing was pretty good, even though I kind of got a little sleepy there for a bit. And I've definitely seen much worse than this. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers a
6.5. 6.5, wow, that's really low.
That's low.
That's low on it. Would you like me to go, Larry? Do you want to go?
Okay. Well, you're the professionals here.
So okay.
Professional stinkers. There you go. I love that.
Well, actually, I'm going to go a different route than you.
Okay, that's fine.
Because as much as I think it is sort of polished, it is still sort of boring on that line.
True.
And at times, and I think it's because of that and because of, I don't know, all the other stuff that goes on it, the bad acting, the, you know, the dialogue was sometimes atrocious. I would give it a 9.
Oh, wow. You know? Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go high and go give it a 9.
Interesting.
So what would you say, Larry?
Well, I'm going to be gracious and split right in the middle here.
Okay.
I'll give it an 8 simply because I mean, some of the acting was acceptable. I'm trying to act, you know, watch it from an actor's point of view, but I think the overall plot and some of the other things that you already mentioned, I can't see it much lower than an 8. So that's what I give it.
But, okay,
that's a pretty.
I mean, it's not the full skunk, but we had some of the glands removed.
So. I like the way you put that. That's cute.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's a bad film. There's no getting around that. But I've definitely seen much worse than this.
I know you have, but this is like, I think it's 6.5. Isn't that like close to like Roller Gator? You know,
Roller Gator. I think I gave it a 7.
Okay. See, 6.5 and 7, yeah.
Well, like, you know what? It didn't have that constant guitar noodling all over the place.
That's true. The music wasn't bad. I mean, and some of it was provided by Donald G. Jackson to go with the My Roller Man. Thing. So, yeah, no, it is, you know, it wasn't the worst movie, but honestly, it was not the greatest, and I can't go any lower than a 9. I can't go high. This is not Neil Breen status.
Oh, no.
And Fred Olen Ray will never be Neil Breen status, no. I don't think.
Oh, I can't wait to see that one.
Oh, God. Any of his Neil Breen movies.
Oh, man. I tell you, next time I come to California.
Maybe he'll come out to California. That would be awesome. Christmas.
Let me see your wrist. Do you have any marks on
Yeah, no, we've seen. Yeah, if you get a chance, go and check out some of our other podcasts and see some of the movies we've seen.
I will. Yeah.
My goodness me, especially season 2. We went a little overboard on the crap movies.
You went overboard.
Well, okay, yes, because they're fun. You know, the worse the movies are, the more fun the podcasts, in my opinion, they end up being. Especially if we have Jen there or poor Lenore, and they have to suffer through it.
Yeah, when we have females there, you know, it gets a little bit dicey.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, that is what it is. But, yeah, so, wow.
It's been fun.
That was a great podcast right there. I guess we'll wrap this up by talking about what's going on right now and how crazy things have been. So, as we mentioned before, I did it. I drove across country with Paul and 10-hour days, four days straight. Yeah, that was not. I do not recommend that ever. Yeah. Again, you know, I hope I never have to do that. And knock on wood, I'm here forever. You know, permanently, because I do not want to go across country again in my van. That was just obnoxious. But it had happened. You know, so but. Basically, we got a chance to hang out and meet some really cool people so far. We went to Las Vegas and we did a couple What the Fuck Fridays for everybody and some Indie Film Cafe spotlights as well. And then I think, did we do anything? We didn't do anything in LA yet, did we?
No, we went to a couple of Ed Wood sites and.
Yeah, we did a few videos and some live videos and things like that. That was pretty cool. But
you're our first celebrity, though.
You're our first celebrity interview. Yeah. So
the one we went
I'm
to
honored.
Immediately, we're like, yes, we have to go to Larry.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, I mean, when you said, bring, you know, you can come here, we were excited because we would just love to come check you out and see what's going on.
And all this quiet.
we thank you. I mean, we know you've got better things to do and you've got all these scripts.
No, I was looking forward to this.
Well, good.
I do have to study my scripts, but I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah, take a break.
I need a break.
You know,
and then you can also, you know, give a couple of suggestions. Say, what if we added some chainsaws?
Yeah, I know.
And some hookers. Why not?
Yeah,
sure.
I think we've got some in one of the films.
Wow,
hookers or chainsaws?
Just hookers.
Okay. Right. So yeah. So we've been doing that, and that's kind of what's going on. I've also got a lot of podcasts that are going on. I just uploaded the first episode of Horror Film Lovers. We talked about The Stuff, and I did that back in Virginia.
Yeah, another 80s classic.
Another 80s classic, but in a different scale.
Yes,
Like Horror Film Lovers is Indie Film Cafe for better movies. You know, like the more like popular, you know, more better movies, I guess. These are more, you know, sneaky but fun movies.
Right. Because we always say the cardinal rule of bad filmmaking is to be boring. So we never try to get a really boring film.
Right.
Even though we might get bad films, they're going to be fun and entertaining.
Right. And we may give you films that you know, help put people to sleep or whatever. Just like Ankle Biters did.
Ankle Biters, yeah.
Ankle Biters was the movie we did, which put Paul to sleep.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm afraid so.
That's the only one so far. That, and I thought Acting Maximus almost put me to sleep, but it didn't.
It was largely because I couldn't see it or hear anything was going on, so I couldn't tell, and I was just like...
A cure for insomnia. Watch one of these films.
And then we always try to tell people, you know, where you can get them, and we don't want to sit there and just say, oh, this movie's terrible. We say it's a lot of fun. It may have some bad stuff, but here's how you get it so that you can have it, add it to your collection, and you guys be judges and see what you think about it. Because
that's fair.
Yeah, we don't want people to not get these movies. We want them shown. We want them talked about and discussed.
Exactly.
Because they're fun.
Mm-hmm. Even Hard Rock Zombies?
Even Hard Rock Zombies, even though I hate it.
I know you hate that movie. You'll never watch that movie again.
Oh, I'll watch it again. It's to share with other people so that they can experience it.
Yes. There's somebody in town that does that. Let's see. Brian Stockstad.
I know him.
He does Monday nights. Monday night bad movie night.
Do
you want to join that?
Monday night.
There you go.
You're still here on Monday night.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness. So
give him a holler.
I will. I will send him a message every soon Monday. As this is over. But yeah, that and speaking of which, so we just gotta say that there is a few things. So this is on the Sick Flick Network.
Yes.
Even though this is not gonna be on the actual Sick Flick Network Spreaker site, this is obviously still popping and everything. We're gonna keep it there. It's still part of the Sick Flick Network.
Right. So if you go to sickflick.com and
sickflickproductions.com,
it's on the list of all that stuff. And
yeah, it's on the list of podcasts.
We're on there with Criterion Watch, where we actually do really good movies that are Criterion worthy. We do Film Freaks,
which is also
sort of our favorite movies that we love that are really good films. And I do one called Forgotten Horror Classics, where I sort of discuss movies that have just been forgotten or overlooked or have sort of vanished over time.
And I do Horror Film Lovers. I got the mainstream, which I haven't really done much with lately, which I will. The Writer's Process, all about writing kind of thing. And then Indie Corner Radio, which will come back. It'll be like interviews and things with independent filmmakers and artists, you know, period. I mean, I might have some bands on there and things like that. And just a ton of these things that... a lot of these podcasts that you just go to spreaker.com/the user/the Sick Flick Network and you can see all the ones and the ones that are coming up, because they're going to be all once a month, and hopefully every month they'll be out or so.
Plus YouTube, we've got stuff all over YouTube, our Indie Film Cafe, What the Fuck Fridays, the spotlights. We're going to be doing short reviews for short films.
DVD hauls.
It's all on YouTube.
The Blu-ray Hunter I've got on YouTube, which also does Blu-ray hauls. So, I mean, we're constantly watching movies and we're constantly reviewing them.
And don't forget, we have a Patreon site as well. So anybody out there who's feeling generous, throw us a buck or two. We'd be more than pleased to get that to help our production costs.
That would be amazing. We would love you guys forever. So... I guess, Larry, so thank you so much once again for coming on.
It was a delight to meet you, sir.
And my pleasure. I'm very honored to meet you both.
Yep.
I really enjoyed what you've done in the past. And
thank you.
I'm going to focus more on what you're doing in the future.
Okay, good.
We appreciate it.
I didn't realize you did so many things.
Everywhere. We're all over the place. We're nerds. We're total movie and podcast nerds.
We love it. I mean, we can't help it, you know. We're actually, after this, we're going and doing a Criterion Watch, I think. We're Film Freaks, one of those. Something when we get there. So, and we're just constantly busy, because that's how we roll. Thank you once again, and we are looking forward to having you back on as a guest at some
thank
point.
You for
don't forget something. Sick Flick Productions with our own, you know, movies and short films and all that.
Yes, and we would love to we definitely are looking to cast you in something.
Absolutely.
You know? Oh, that one about the Yeti and the Bigfoot.
Sasquatch, Sasquatch versus Yeti. We'll definitely
my
do that.
Favorite
at some
subject
point.
Matter.
Outstanding. There you go.
There you go. So thank you guys so much for listening today, and thank you, Larry, and thank you, Paul, and it was just a wonderful podcast. I love this. It was the start of the new year and start of a new thing. And you know what's going to be the greatest thing? Is this going to come out the day after my 38th birthday.
There you go. Wow.
I'm still 37 Fantastic. Now, but when this comes out, I'll be 38.
Outstanding.
So, that's great.
Yeah. So I'm excited. Look forward to everything that's going on here. And hopefully we can all work together in the future.
Yeah, maybe we can do another podcast again. What do you think?
Absolutely. Sure.
Great. Oh, you'd be down, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you all very, very much. And we will see you next time.
Okay. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to... See, I don't even need to be right next to the microphone.
No, you don't. You project.
I project pretty well.
There we go.
But everybody else might need to. So, Paul, say hello.
Hello.
And Larry?
Hello, hello.
Outstanding.
He projects pretty well, too.
Yeah, I'm a teacher, so...
All right.
I'm that teacher's voice.
Ooga boobies.
Okay. Yeah, right. Let's see what this sounds like.